So, Roberto, what are you looking at?
I didn't see anything. I saw nothing. I'm just gonna go walk over here.
That was another great ending to the show.
Because that's exactly what I like was funny when that ending hit.
I didn't deliver that quite well, but
well, no, because when that ending hit and Frank looks at the audience, just like, what are you looking at? I'm like, I didn't see anything. Yeah. I said it in a little bit different tone with maybe some more stronger verbiage per se.
Sure.
Perhaps a curse word or two, but like, hey, I didn't see it. Whatever happened, that's between you guys. You know, my lips are sealed, Frank. Don't worry, I'm not going to be your leak. Because that's exactly – I love that moment because he had not talked to the audience in a while.
Yeah.
And I was expecting him to already have broken the fourth wall at that point. And then when he did the, what are you looking at? Like, oh, I'm still here. I need to go. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm still here, man.
Yes, we've become kind of a nuisance for him that he doesn't want us to see this.
Well, because it's just like, what are you doing here? Like, get the heck out of here. Like, you're not supposed to see this. Mm. You know, and it was a very interesting moment for that episode and everything else. But before we get there, we should probably lead into how we get there.
That's true. And we should also say that we are talking about the House of Cards, as we all know, but we're talking about chapter 32, or if you're following in, you know, by seasons and episodes, it's season 6, it would be episode 3, but chapter 32.
Yeah, season 3, episode 6.
Right, did I say that wrong?
I think you inverted. That's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Season 15, chapter 100. 4500. Yeah, no. But it's chapter 32. That's kind of how it's set up. So
our long struggle with Frank as eternal Lord and Savior of the world. I'm kidding.
Right. But basically, this show, the predominant storyline is that Claire and Frank are heading out on Air Force One to Russia to try and save or bring back Michael Corrigan, who has been arrested for violating the homosexual propaganda law in Russia. And they also are kind of hoping they can squeeze in some of those extra deals they've been trying to work with the Russian President Petrov at the same time, such as the Middle East deal. So what are your thoughts overall?
Well, let's start with the peace deal, because again, this is very, very multifaceted kind of stuff. That might have been the most, you know, like we always talk about how sometimes House of Cards will get really deep into politics. That one got really deep into politics, but I did actually kind of enjoy this one. And I think I enjoyed it because what was really cool is that normally in these shows, they don't really delve into international politics. They don't really delve into how politics are in different countries and how it's resolved. Like we're here in America, you know, a lot of our political stuff is, you know, based on votes or your, you know, your polling exit polls or your, you know, your approval rating. You know, that's how we tend to deal with stuff here. That's how, you know, when you hear like the president doing a bad job, his approval rating has gone, you know, gone down to 52% or whatever. Whereas in Russia, which is what was interesting to hear Petrov and you know, Victor essentially say, is that it all depends on how, you know, how you show strength as a leader, whether that be in your local government or against the evil Americans, so to speak. And I actually like that. I like that they talked about that because it's something that usually gets glossed over. Usually they just sort of, you know, the Russians are over here and they do their own thing. And I liked how they at least went into a little bit of the nuance in the show.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. That's what I absolutely loved about it is that, you know, that I think it really reflected very well. And maybe it's just my naive American view of it, who, you know, took graduate courses in Russian culture and that sort of thing and thinks I have a grasp on it. But maybe I don't. What I do understand about it is the desire for Russians to be very unique, particularly since the fall of the Soviet Union. And this is something that's kind of come around where they want a powerful leader who will stand up to the West, stand up for what they believe in. And since the fall of the Soviet Union, there really has been a huge conservative cultural push that sort of goes back to the imperial age, the imperial Russia, where they've really looked towards a czar, a strong, powerful father figure. That is something that's gone back through the beginnings of Russia and Kiev and Rus. That's something that's really ingrained in their culture and they're really holding on to. So it makes sense that they have this homosexual propaganda law because it seems so old school. It seems something that would never happen in the United States, but it is one of those things that they can kind of say, well, this is ours and we don't want these Americans coming in and telling us what to do with or how to run our country. Because basis of this homosexual propaganda law is that it's supposed to protect children. Right. And it's not just about homosexuals, but it's also about gore, obscene photos, pornography, a lot of things. So it's all about protecting
deviance.
Yes. Correct. Yes. So that's what I absolutely love about it. And I love that because when we were talking pre-show, I kept wanting to call him Putin. I think that it's exactly that kind of character. What they say about Putin is, he may be kind of a hard-nosed sort of corrupt kind of guy, but he's our guy, So,
And I agree with you there for sure. Cause I think Victor kind of puts it best in the show. And this is something that that we get to see, because you hear Victor and Frank kind of talk it over. Because at one point, Corrigan is just like, I'm refusing to say my statement and whatever. And they're talking it over. And I think Victor puts it best, the kind of people Russia are, at least within the House of Cards world. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's a little bit of truth to it. I whenever talking about fiction, I tend to stick in the world of fiction. So, within the world of its fiction.
That's
Whether it be based in reality or not, doesn't matter. He puts it the idea saying that that within America, if they don't like what you're doing, they can vote you out. They vote you out. They get rid of you. They bring in the other party and we've seen that time and time again. We've seen we don't like what the Democrats are doing. Let's get the Republicans in there. And I don't like what the Republicans are doing, a terrible thing. Let's get more Democrats.
We'll swing back and forth every couple of years,
And nothing really, changes.
Right.
What I like about what he says happens in Russia, and this is important to history, and you bring it up with the czars and the Soviet Union, things like that, when people aren't happy or see a little bit of weakness, they topple statues. They
it's a coup d'etat.
The army gets involved. Someone, something happens, some crazy thing happens, and Russia being the kind of the area that used to be the USSR, used to be the giant land, controlled thing by communism, the big red evil, if you will, in terms of American stuff. And now, we have a lot of those countries that were part of Russia are their own kind of thing. They're no longer part of the USSR. And Russia's sort of viewed as this sort of not weaker power, but sort of this thing. And so I liked how he worded that, because it was a very honest statement to Frank, to saying, look, it ain't like the States here. I do something wrong, I show weakness, it's not that I get voted out, it's that I'm gone. And it was very, very actually refreshing to hear him say that.
Yeah. Actually, I have a question for you. Because we were talking before, and I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm usually surprised. Claire, after my second or third watching, I started to think that maybe her intentions when she was with Michael Corrigan were a little bit different than what I assumed. What I saw on the surface was that she really just wanted to get him home, and that was her major goal. But also, she's been bombarded with being called, I think the entire time she's in Russia, they only refer to her as the First Lady. They never refer to her as ambassador. And that's really what she's supposed to be there for, as the ambassador. And that's been kind of playing a game in her mind. And I think she could have very easily, as soon as she found out that Michael Corrigan said, no way, I'm not going to sign this, I'm not going to apologize to the president, and I'm not going to say I did something illegal, I think that she could have very immediately set things in motion to maybe backtrack on the peace deal and then pushed to get Corrigan out on Corrigan's terms, and then just kind of counted the loss of the UN peace deal. And I think that she didn't want to give that up. She wanted to walk out with both. So I think that she was just as ambitious as Frank. Getting around to my question, what do you think Claire's main motive was, and what do you think Frank's motive was, and how do they kind of
If I were to say Claire's main motive, I would say you're right. It's to get Corrigan home safely, to essentially pull what an American ambassador is supposed to do. Come in there, negotiate what you need to negotiate, rescue your people, show that, you know, that you're a person of peace and not so much a person of war. Whereas I view Frank's mission is to get stuff done, is to go, you know, because whenever people tend to criticize a president, it's usually because he didn't do anything, or he didn't do the thing you liked him to want him to do. Usually people are like, the president, you know, didn't negotiate, you know, because if we were to watch the news cycle for what just happened in this episode, the news cycle, you know, would be, you know, why do you think the president didn't push for more, you know, for the peace deal more? Like, people will forget about the whole, you know, Corrigan will be but a footnote in this whole thing, whereas the bigger picture will be like, well, the peace deal's now gone and everything the president's worked for is nothing. You know, how do you think this is going to affect him on the House? You know, and so whereas I think Frank's mission was to, you know, going there, Corrigan was more of the means to get things done. You know, Corrigan was like, I'm going to go, we're going to free this guy. Not because I really care about this guy, because I really don't. Because, you know, whatever you believe, I don't really give a crap. I just want to use you as a mouthpiece so I can get all this other stuff done I've been working towards, that being the Middle East peace deal and stuff like that.
But I think that was also Claire's original agenda. It was just the same as Frank's. I think it was just after meeting with Corrigan, spending that time with him, and then him talking to her so kind of close to home on so many issues about her relationship and what his purpose is, and then having him commit suicide while she's in the cell with him. I think that that's when she flipped. I think up until that point.
Oh, yeah. She definitely flipped. She definitely. This is the thing that I understand about Claire. I say this again as the character, not necessarily how I believe, but Claire's strength and weakness is that she lets her emotions get to her. I say it's her strength because it keeps her human, it keeps her sane, and it keeps her sort of, as us, the audience, someone we can connect to and relate to. Because when we see, you know, Corrigan get, you know, kill himself, we're like, man, wasted life. You know, it's a shame that he, you know, that nothing will happen. Someone should speak for this man. And, you know, and of course, the First Lady, the Ambassador of the United States, Claire Underwood, speaks in a great, awesome way, you know, shaming the president and all that stuff. Whereas it's her weakness is because, no offense to Michael Corrigan, in terms of story, but he ain't Che Guevara, and there is really no revolution to be had in Russia in the way that he wants it to. He's not going to be the saving American coming into Russia to do it, because it's not going to have it's for it to work in Russia and to get rid of that kind of law. It can't come from outside. It has to come from within. It has to come from that, like, one guy. And and ultimately the way I view revolutions, like, he says, like, you know, at one point he says, like, yeah, but that's how revolution starts. Like, no, revolutions start by one guy convincing a whole other bunch of people that his view is right, and that we all together should stand up. Not just, I'm one guy that, you know, that's a martyr. And while a martyr can spark a revolution, do not get me wrong,
there are many elements that are necessary for something to become a revolution. Absolutely. Right. Socioeconomical conditions need to change. You know, yes, absolutely.
There's a lot of things. And so you look at Frank's point of view, and Frank understands that no matter what, everybody's finger is on the button. I know that the Cold War is supposedly over, but I don't think it is. I don't think it ever really truly got over. I just think the players changed and the battlefield might have changed a bit. But everyone still has thermonuclear devices at the ready.
Yeah.
And looking through history, wars have started over less. So
absolutely.
I, you know, it's tricky because I understand Claire. I'm like, yeah, the punk side of me is like, yeah, Claire, speak up. You know, tell Petrov what you think. Tell him how much you're shamed by him. At the same time, Frank's like, this isn't going to be the battleground you think it's going to be. This isn't where you make change, because we are, you know, this is an entirely different thing. Like, I love that, like, near the end of the episode, he says, being brave isn't killing yourself. It's keeping your emotions in check when the stakes are that high. Essentially, you know, to Frank, a lot of this is a very much a high stakes poker game, and making sure you don't give any kind of tell, any kind of, you know, emotion to show, to give that other player, in this case, Russia, the advantage. And so it's very tense, but part of me really sides with Frank's point of view, just because of that, like, you have to be that. You can't be swayed by emotion because of the fact that, you know, that all Petrov has to do is say, I declare war on the United States. And that becomes almost in a weird way, communism again. And then you got China in the mix, and you got North Korea, then you get the idea.
Yeah, which is why I would never want to be president. You right. definitely have to be soulless and just
– yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that she really – that definitely made a huge mistake, political mistake. If she wants to be who – you know, she wants to advance in politics. She wants to be president, that – you know, she's got that mentality. And what she did, burning bridges like that.
Well, because
after the fact, I mean, if the guy was still alive, that's one thing. But after the fact, I felt like she should at least wait until she got home.
I mean, she's definitely the writer was right. I forgot the guy, yes. The writer of Frank's biography. She did do the right thing. She did do the right thing. In my opinion, yes, that was the right
thing. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But normally, it doesn't go without. But sometimes doing the right thing doesn't come without consequences.
Yes.
And I think that that's an important thing to note.
So there's a lot that this whole peace deal and that the workings with the Russians also showed a lot about the marriage fraction between Frank and Claire. But before we do that, why don't we talk about our ad?
Yeah, we got to thank some people. We got to thank, of course, UK2.net. They cover all the costs of bandwidth and hosting for all the shows here at the British Tech Network. They can hook up with web addresses, help you build websites, and give you all the tools you need to help manage the way your website handles traffic and downloads, and a lot of different things, from shared hosting to virtual private servers. That if we had Charlotte Henry here again, she'd be singing the praises, telling how they handled all the traffic from all the stuff about some political thing. I'm just brushing over the fact of that. But she would be telling about all the support and stuff like that. And she's, again, it told very high praises of these guys. And so if you are looking for some hosting there in the UK, head over to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offers and codes available to you. And like to thank UK2.net for sponsoring everything here at the British Tech Network.
And we miss you, Charlotte.
Yes.
All right. So what I saw is that there's definitely a lot of resentment between Frank and Claire. I think that Frank is starting more and more to view Claire as really getting in the way of his agenda, and not because in the past, well, I mean, I think they said it perfectly when he said, I should have never made you ambassador. And she said, I should have never made you president. Like, I think that was just perfect about how their relationship is going right now. What are your thoughts on
that? I mean, ultimately, that's the thing, is that what I like about this episode a lot is we got to learn, you know, through her interaction with Corrigan, just how much at this marriage, you know, maybe at one point marriage was important. Maybe at one point they were in love. Who knows? I'm not going to say that they weren't or were not. But as of right now, as it stands, a lot of this is just marriage of convenience. It's a marriage of, well, I need this, you need this, let's stay together because it's going to help both of us out.
Yeah, partnership.
Right, and the problem is that Claire is always in a weird position because, you know, for lack of better words, she still has some humanity left.
Mm-hmm.
She still is somewhat of an outsider to this whole political thing, and that's sort of been her, you know, I keep saying her strength and weakness. Because if I look at Frank has no humanity left. Frank is nothing more than a soulless politician. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that per se. But the emotion he has left is anger and frustration and that. He really doesn't have much happiness, and there sure as heck any jolly in his heart. But it's interesting because like right now, you know, because there's the scene. What's funny is that I didn't know when we'd see the scene because they had teased season three, they'd had the whole "we're murderers, Francis." You know, we're not murderers or survivors, you know.
Right.
I didn't know when they were going to show that scene. And
oh, I forgot that was part of the teaser. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I didn't know how they're going to show in the context. And this is the context of – this is sort of that moment when both parties have realized that they are in this for two separate things. And I think it's important to note that because Claire, you know, really, really, really – doesn't want to be known in history. Like, it's funny because they're both very similar. And maybe that's why they hooked up the way they did, because they both don't want to be relegated to one thing in terms of history. They want their own story.
Right.
You know, Frank doesn't want to be known as Francis Underwood, the one president who got in there because of some, you know, technicality. He really wants to be known as Francis Underwood, President of the United States, who did X, Y, and Z and got the Jobs Act to do whatever the heck. And Claire Underwood does not ever want to be known as Claire Underwood, the First Lady. Just that little note in history. No, she wants to be known as Ambassador Underwood, you know, the person who brought the, you know, peace to the Middle East and all, you know, all the things she wants. They both want their glory in history. And not only does that doesn't jive all the time.
Yeah, and it's funny because she's like Frank, where we keep wondering where does it end? How far do they want to go? I mean, he's already president of the United States. How much further can he go? And, you know, obviously it's pretty clear that she wants not only to be ambassador, but she wants that as her stepping stone into politics. Because she said in the past a few episodes that if I don't have this, you may be out of office come November or, you know, during the next election, and I will be out and I will lose every chance I have. So I have to make the name for myself now. And that's when he went ahead and just appointed her as ambassador and bypassed Congress to appease her. But, you know, so she just wanted something to get her foot in the door of politics aside from picking out the Easter egg.
She wants to have her own story.
Yeah. But I mean, other than that, I don't really know what more to say about their marriage. I mean, I could talk and talk because like I said, I've seen the entire series and I'm really interested in like how this is developing, you know, because I mean, this has been a development since the very first season. And I know that's not no surprise or no spoiler to you or anyone else, but their marriage is one of the core storylines of this entire series, obviously. The what goes on between Frank and Claire and how they work as a partnership to get the power they want.
I think that's important is that it is a partnership, but the problem is both partners want it all, respectively. And you can't, and in a partnership that can't be done, it has to be shared. And it's interesting because even like this whole episode talks about marriage, about, you know, is marriage about sacrifice? Like her opinion of it, it's about respect. And it's interesting hearing how all this works out because, you know, on one hand, it is about respect and she respects Frank to a certain degree, but, you know, definitely Frank at times doesn't respect her. It gets really weird and muddled. And I think, I mean, ultimately, there's going to be more of a breaking point for sure. And ultimately, it's definitely going to be interesting how it breaks down.
Okay, so, you know, there's a few other storylines that are very minor, but, you know, we've seen bits and pieces of this developing. So I guess it's worth a mention. Gavin is trying to get more information on Rachel's whereabouts. So he's come into the
best social engineering, the best social engineering act I've ever seen in a long time.
How so? Yeah.
Well, he, again, the way he does it, he's like, you know, hi. He works in with a friend, introduces him, helps out, ends up saying he thinks he has AIDS, goes, gets checked up, knows he has nothing, you know, that he's going to be negative on all fronts. Like, it's not even close.
That was cold.
Getting it up to everything. And it's like, I'm positive. Like, it's so brilliantly executed social manipulation.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I, again, is it horrible? Of course it is. It's horrendous. It's horrible in that. But when you're a black hat, and I say black hat for a very specific reason, because he's not, he ain't gray. He ain't white. He is definitely in the trenches and doing destruction. That's what a black, in terms of hacking, we have three types of hackers. White hack, usually the guys that are trying to find exploits and reveal them and fix them. Grays are, like what they say, they're kind of between. Black hacks are the guys that are really hacking, really destroying just for the sake of sometimes destroying.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to see that, because it's like, oh, I know this game. Cool. You're doing the best social engineering, because you're manipulating somebody. You're playing on their emotions, and you're getting the data you need to get the job done. And it's really cool to see kind of Gavin in that, because, you know, when we first got introduced to Gavin, we didn't quite know, you know, at the very get go how far he would go to do his own hacking. We never had saw him hack at all. Mm-hmm. And I said before, I was really excited to see Gavin get into the fray and to show kind of his tips and his tricks and techniques. And it's really cool to see that as a character. I mean, yes, is it, you know, abhorrible? Of course it is. I'm not saying it is good or bad. If I'm anything, I'm more of a white hat personally. Mm-hmm. But it's really cool to see him get in there and just like, oh, so this is how Gavin works. He doesn't care. He's going to manipulate you and get what he wants, because that's what a good hacker does in terms of this regard.
But I also think he's maybe a black hat with a little bit of a heart, in the sense that he's really doing this because he's imprisoned.
He's doing this because
he has no choice.
But the point is, you have to keep in mind, he is not doing this for the good of anybody else but himself. He is doing this at a very selfish act. And it's something that's very, you know, I think that is one of the overlying arches of this episode, now that we talk about it, is that
because he wants to get himself out of this terrible place where he's
not doing it to help Stamper or anything like that. He could care less about Rachel. Rachel is, to him, is but a data point that he knows that he can use to manipulate Stamper to give him what he wants, which is getting out of here.
But also keep in mind that it was Stamper that came to him to ask him, you know, to get him to help him, with the promise of he'll get him out of working for the FBI.
Right. But that came because of the fact that he had had information on something else that Stamper knew he had information on.
And then also keep in mind that Gavin also wanted one of his friends who was a hacker released from prison, too. Yeah. Originally, that was supposed to be part of the deal, and it wasn't.
Yeah, that's just to appease him. It's funny, because we keep looking back on this, and only as we talk about it now, because like with Corrigan, for example, there's a point where Claire says, you know, this isn't about you're not doing sacrifice. This is all for your ego. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as I look at Gavin, and while yes, he is in prison working at the FBI or CIA, whatever division he's working in, he's in prison nonetheless. But only because he views it as prison. Like anyone else, like, oh, well, cool. You got a desk job. You're employed. You're no longer kind of behind the law. You're not going to go to Guantanamo anymore. But for him, you know, he wants to be that free rebel, the kind of black hat. Now he's a suit and everything else. And while that is demeaning at times, for sure, everything he's doing is very much for himself. He's not doing the help Stamper. He's not doing it because that. It's just Rachel happens to be this data point that this other guy is interested in. And if I give this guy the data he needs, I can get out of here.
You know, obviously I'm thinking of the word selfish. And I think it's kind of funny that the show started and ended on someone explaining that suicide was being selfish.
Yep.
You know, when Frank was talking to the ghostwriter, I forgot his name, who's writing his book. He said that the author, the story Scorpio that he wrote was about a guy who died of AIDS, but he didn't really die of AIDS. He committed suicide, and he didn't want to say that because it was a selfish way to go.
Yep.
And then at the end, Frank says, well, what Corrigan did was selfish, you know? Right.
And it was. I mean, because it was all for him to be a martyr and that. And in this case, Gavin, it's very funny. I only talk about it now. I'm like, yeah, that is the overarching theme of this episode. Is
and Stamper as well. He's helping Dunbar get, you know, the support she needs. But he's doing it selfishly, not to help her, not to get back at Frank, but so that he could get his foot back in the door.
Yeah. This is everything revolves around everybody else's actions that are out, you know.
Wow.
If you haven't learned anything about House of Cards and specifically this episode, everybody is out for themselves.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Interesting. You know, actually, I think that's a pretty good way to wrap this up.
We're pretty much out of time anyway. Okay, but that, yeah, I only talking about it now do realize it is all.
Yeah. But it's clear as day too, but it's just, you know, something, you know, anyways. So Roberto, where can people find you? What are you up to? These days?
I'm easy to find. Just hit me up on Twitter at Vincent404. And of course, if you want to check out anything else I do, just head on over to cosmicradio.tv. It's a good central location for all the things I tend to do and all the other things I tend to do beyond this show here.
Great. And I'm Jackie Hearn. You can reach me at JackieHearn81 on Twitter, or just go to JackieHearn.com and you can find links to anything else I do. But also, if you're interested, if you're listening to this show, you want to add some feedback, or you want to be part of it, hit us up on Twitter. Contact us. We are definitely looking for big fans of the show and also of the original UK show. Maybe you can come on and talk with us, chat for a while about your thoughts on the House of Cards.
Yeah, where can people email us if they wanted to email us?
You can email us at thebritishtechnews@gmail.com. So that's britishtechnews@gmail.com, and that will be forwarded on to us.
Yeah, just mention in the subject line House of Cards show, or within the message body itself, some form of fashion that'll say, hey, this is for this show here, and they'll forward it our way, and we will get to it and read your comments and such.
Sure. Or like I said, we can reach us on Twitter. Just, correct, you know, hit us up on Twitter at JackieHearn81. Just say howdy. Yeah. And you want to, as us Americans say, and, or at Vincent404.
Correct.
All right. Great. So I can't wait to get talking to other folks as well too. So until next time, take care.
What are you looking at?
Yeah, get out of here. Bye.